This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
Am I alive? Okay, I'm alive. Cool. Wonderful. Fantastic. We're having these things called technical difficulties as we operate out of our home offices. From time to time, I get distracted by my little floofle butt, Aria. She is a cat. I have a couple of boxes behind me. She comes over, starts chomping on them. That gets a little distracting, but okay. Enough filibustering. Let's talk about the sports. So, when you get bump...
I'm going to filibuster
the Seahawks,
here. Paul?
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Am I dead?
Yeah, I'm dead? Filibustering. You're fine. You're fine. But we have greatness on the line right now. And I just feel like I need to interrupt your babbling here to bring in Drew Bledsoe, our beloved Coug, and beloved quarterback, Paul. Drew, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my
What's happening, guys? Bump, how you doing? Hey, Paul, what's up?
What up?
Oh, my God. All right, so now this is sort of heavenly. Drew, first off, this is incredible. You were like my first favorite player. I had three jerseys of you when I was a little kid. I am just blown away that you're aboard this show right now. Thank you so much. And I don't really know where to start. Jess has dropped like two surprises on me this week. First off,
I can't help myself.
I know.
Thank you, Drew.
We got Lori Malloy on. Now we're getting Drew Bledsoe on. This is amazing. So how are you holding up, man? What you been doing through all this COVID-19 madness?
You know, we live down in Bend, Oregon, and you know, our quarantine honestly has been pretty easy outside of watching, you know, friends with businesses struggle, which is obviously brutal. But in terms of what we've been doing, man, our golf courses stay open, so we've been out playing some golf and you know, get to get out and go for a hike in the woods, so we've been finding a way to enjoy ourselves. And now it's you know, it's really funny. Last week, you know, they kind of whatever phase it is, but they allowed restaurants and pubs to be open in Oregon, and so we got to go out and actually, you know, have a snack in an establishment, and I was sort of shocked by how great it felt. It was almost like, you know, Christmas morning, because you just got to go be around people again, which felt really great. Obviously, everybody being really safe and respectful and all of those things, but man, it sure felt great to feel a little bit more normal.
Drew, thanks for hopping on, man.
What's that?
I'm jealous of that. I'll be honest, Drew. Like, I have been dying to go back to some sort of actual establishment. I mean, I'm not quite so crazy as some of these people that are getting rolled on social media for driving like 600 miles to get their hair cut. Apparently, there's a person from Washington State who drove all the way from Washington to California so that he could get his hair cut, and it didn't go so well for him. But I'm with you. Like, that has got to feel so great just to be out and about and see people that are acting at least somewhat normally. I'm hoping that is something that is going to be coming to us pretty soon. But honestly, who knows? What was your go-to meal?
You know, when it was my turn to cook, and then, you know, my wife, she actually is a very good cook. So our the restaurant at home was pretty fantastic, you know, through the quarantine. But it was my turn. It was, you know, I just got out on the grill, you know, grill up some steaks or some chicken and throw it together. When it comes time for me to take over and make dinner, I have a very limited menu, but I know how to execute on that menu very well. So, you know, it would get redundant if we had to do it all the time, but I can make a good meal every now and then.
Drew, every time I see you, yes, you're working, man. You know, so I never really have time to ask you this question. I've always wanted to ask you. 1992, Alpa Cup Snow Bowl. Was that pass intended for Bobo? And who ran the wrong route? Because I doubt you signaled posts on both sides of the field.
Yeah, it's actually not a super closely guarded secret anymore. I think it was Philip Bobo that outed me. But Bobo caught that pass, and I was actually throwing it to CJ. But I will stand by this. I think if Bobo didn't catch it, I think CJ was going to catch it. And I'm going to my grave with that. You can't make me talk that back. Right? But Bobo intercepted it. Otherwise CJ definitely would have caught it.
There you go.
Drew, you had an absolute cannon. What's the furthest that you ever threw a pass?
Like a pass in a game?
I'm just talking, have you ever been able to throw it out of a stadium or anything like that?
Yeah, I can throw it over the mountains over there. Look out your window. I can throw the football over the mountains over there. No, you know, we did the quarterback challenge a bunch of years. And every single year when we did the long ball throw, I finished second by 1 yard, I think five times. I think it was Randall Cunningham got me by a yard. And then the funny one was we with Favre, you know, we're down there and all you have to do, you just have to land the ball in between the hash marks, you know, so it's not like you got to be accurate. But Favre's, I think he got four throws, and Favre's first three throws were out of bounds. Like just missed, like didn't even qualify, right? And so I had a good ball out there, like, I don't know, 78 yards, something like that. And then on Favre's final throw, he threw the thing and he hit my stake in the ground. So it was only like past my ball by like half a friggin' yard. But he took me down on the final throw, which was annoying, but that's just Brett doing annoying things.
That's gotta be annoying. So one of many moments in my childhood when I cried was waking up. And honestly, I feel like you need to take my mom to task on this. I went to bed during Super Bowl 31 at age 7 with you guys having a 14-10 lead on the Packers. I woke up the next day to find out, because I wasn't allowed to watch the whole Super Bowl, but I got to watch the whole next Super Bowl, to find out that you guys had lost. And I was so upset, and I feel strongly, you know, if I kept watching the game, I don't know, maybe things go a little differently.
Well, first of all, I think that's child abuse to make your kid go to bed during the Super Bowl. So we need to talk to your mom.
Mom.
But second, you know, if she really cared, she would have, like, let you live out the dream a little bit longer. And, you know, when you woke up in the morning and had your Cheerios, you know, you could have sat there thinking that we actually hung on and won the game. Was it for that damn Desmond Howard, we would have.
I have a conspiracy theory on this, and I've looked this up. That year, Adam Vinatieri, the Patriots kicker, ran down Herschel Walker on a kick return. And if you go back and you watch that Desmond Howard kick return, Adam Vinatieri gets held by a random Packer guy. He gets held just a little bit. Honestly, I think Adam Vinatieri might have caught Desmond Howard on that, and who knows? I'm with you. Who knows if not for that damn Desmond Howard?
So here's a really funny story about the Herschel Walker deal. So, you know, I went down to Dallas with my last stop. And so I asked, just a couple of guys that had been around the whole time. I think it might have just been like the equipment guys, that were there through the whole thing. Cause the equipment guys, you know, they're just part of the furniture, man. They're always there. Important parts of the furniture. We always take good care of them. But, equipment guys asked him, hey, how did it go for Herschel when he got run down by Vinatieri? And they said, oh my God, you have no idea. that he never ever lived it down, because if you watch it, you know, Vinatieri had a little bit of an angle, but not much of an angle. Like, he just ran him friggin' down. And they said that Herschel Walker's life for the rest of the time he was with the Cowboys was absolute misery, because he got caught from behind by a kicker, and they would never let him live it down. Anytime he said anything to anybody, you're like, yeah, at least I didn't get caught by a kicker. But now Vinatieri is fast, but it still doesn't change the fact that he was a kicker. And Bump, you know that. I mean, geez, it doesn't matter if the kicker was a sprint champion, he's still a kicker. And if you get tackled by him from behind, man, you never get to live that stuff down.
Yeah, I almost got hawked by a kicker at Arizona State, had to dive into the end zone. So thank God that didn't happen. But Drew, I wanted to ask you, you know, other than Washington State being known for their quarterbacks and high powered offenses and whatnot, we are known for our ability to stay hydrated. What was your favorite establishment to go to in the Palouse during the offseason for a beverage?
Well, so here's the crappy thing for me is that I was never 21, right? So I turned 21 at the scouting combine, and then when I came back from the scouting combine, I'd already declared for the draft. Then we got to go finally go into some of the establishments because, from my freshman year, I was pretty recognizable on campus, so the fake ID thing wasn't going to work very well for me in Pullman. But when we got back, I had to go to the Coug. I'd walked by the Coug, for 3 years and never got to set foot inside. So of course had to go see what that was all about. And then we went over to Moscow and we'd go to a couple places over there and hang out. The funny thing is though, my son's up there and so I get back there quite a bit and, all the names have changed from when we were there,
Yeah.
I heard Bush was the go-to drink there. I found out about this from Kyle Brown, who produces Tom, Jake, and Stacy, our midday show. He's the program director here. Because we were having a conversation because he invited me out to the Palouse once. Because I have declared myself an honorary kook, mainly because of you, Drew, but also because I have an appreciation for cats. He told me that Bush was the go-to drink there. Is that true? Did that change over time?
No, it was Bush and then Schmidt, the animal beer. I think that was the cheapest, which, we all know in college, you're not real particular about what kind of beer you're drinking. You just want to know whatever's the cheapest that day.
Exactly.
And for a while there, Schmidt's with all the animals on the cans, that was the cheapest beer for a while.
Okay. Interesting.
Hey, Drew, we know that our Coug fans are loyal. They go hard for you. And you were able to be there for game day a couple of years ago when ESPN was down there. What was that Coug atmosphere like?
It was so incredibly cool. And I have to admit, I was a little bit worried, to be honest with you, because I know how hard Cougs party, just on a Tuesday, let alone, you finally get game day, in town after all these years. I thought it was going to be kind of a mess. But all of the Coug fans they were perfect. Everybody was respectful. They were loud when they were supposed to be. They were quiet when they were supposed to be. And I just thought they represented our school and our town and, everything about that in an entirely classy way. And that was really cool. But I will tell you kind of a funny story. So we flew that morning. They came and picked us up, wheels up, came and picked us up down in Bend and flew us up there. And we landed at the Pullman Airport. And when we landed, they had a couple of Suburbans there waiting for us. And, we jump in, these two Suburbans, and this guy drove from the Pullman Airport to campus quite literally as fast as he could drive the car. And so for those that don't know, the drive from the airport to the campus is probably all of like 6 or 7 minutes. And he drove like he was, trying to kill us. And so we just, we jump out. It's really early in the morning. We get in these cars. And all of a sudden now I'm got to go on set pretty soon. And I'm shaking. I'm so nervous from how this guy was driving. I mean, he was going crazy. And so then we got there. And, of course, once we got there and had to wait an hour before it went on. So there was absolutely no reason for him to hurry. But thankfully, that hour gave me some time to calm down. And then I don't know if you remember, but during that episode, they had that story about the kid, I forget his name right now, from Purdue. He was dying, but he'd sort of become mascot for the Purdue Boilermakers, and so they played that piece. Well, now I'm crying, sitting there watching this incredible story about this kid and his bravery, and so I was terrified, and then I was in tears, and then okay, Drew, you're on. I'm like, wait a second, I got to collect myself.
Oh, no.
A glass of wine or something. I got to settle down. But it was just such an amazingly cool experience, and of course, we beat the crap out of the Ducks that day, which just put the icing on top of the cake.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's your go-to wine of choice? I'm a Malbec guy, and obviously, I know that you are you've perfected the craft of winemaking, which I'm very, very envious of. That's something I want to do. It's something my dad has randomly picked up as a hobby. But what's your go-to wine?
I say this sort of in jest, but it's actually sort of true. We try a lot of different wines from a lot of parts of the world, which during the quarantine, that work, if you will, went up even more. So we're trying stuff from all over the place. But I will tell you that something that we're seeing that I think is going to be interesting to watch is I think Merlot is making a comeback. You know, for those that are not wine initiated, there was a movie called Sideways that came out about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And that movie had more impact on Merlot as a wine varietal than probably any movie has ever had on any other product. Because there's a line in the movie where Paul Giamatti says, "I ain't drinking no bleeping Merlot." And so all of a sudden, you know, anybody that thought they knew something about wine, you know, if you order Merlot, they're like, "Oh, you stupid, you just don't know anything." And it actually just crushed Merlot as a varietal. The movie annihilated Merlot sales in the United States and I think worldwide. But you know, Merlot, if done properly, is actually one of the great wines in the world. It's finally now overcoming that stigma and making a little comeback. So we've been getting into that. And then I love Italian wines. And then, you know, Barolo's from Northern Italy, Barbaresco's same, you know, from the same part of the country. And then, some of the super Tuscans, down in Central Italy. I'm just a huge Italian wine fan.
Drew, the first time I had your wine is when I went to your golf tourney in Suncadia, and great event, man. You guys took care of us. Are you doing your golf tournament this year, and where's it going to be, if so?
Not doing it this year. Matter of fact, we'd already put it on hold for this year. I think we're going to go to every other year on that, which we were sort of fortunate that we'd already planned to do that because it probably wouldn't be able to happen to this year anyway. But we'll bring it back next year, and it'll either be at Coeur d'Alene or back up at Suncadia, one or the other. We're kind of going back and forth there. The Suncadia thing's nice because a lot of the West Side Coupe fans can just come up and back in the day. When it's Coeur d'Alene, you know, it kind of requires an extra day on both ends. My guess is we'll probably be in Coeur d'Alene, and it'll be next year. It'll be 2021.
Drew, I've got so many fond memories of you having played, whether it was the first game I ever went to, which was, I think, August 31st of 97, where you and the Pats beat the Chargers 41-7, and you just had an absolute field day, or if it was you in relief in the AFC Championship game helping the Patriots get to their first Super Bowl victory. But my favorite memory, so I went to this game. You had played two games in a row, and you had these dramatic comebacks in them, and I think you had a busted thumb. And there was this game against the Buffalo Bills where there may or may not have been a questionable pass interference call at the very end of the game that set up the ultimate game-winning touchdown pass to Ben Coates. And you were doing this all with a broken thumb, and I don't know how you did it. Can you take us back through that game? How were you able to get through, like, back-to-back weeks where your hand was messed up and you're slinging the ball all over the place?
Yeah, I actually broke my finger. It was my index finger, my throwing hand.
Gotcha.
And a game against the Dolphins. And you know, didn't feel very good, but you know, but we were driving for what ultimately became a game-winning touchdown when that happened. And thankfully, we had a timeout. We had a couple of timeouts, so we used one timeout rather than have me like having to take an injury timeout. And I went over and, you know, and it hurt, but it still worked. Like, I could still throw. And so, you know, finished that game. I thought it was up to my finger was just jammed. I didn't think it was like, actually broken. But then found out after the game that it was broken. And so what they did is they went in and they put pins in my index finger to hold the bones in place because it had been kind of shattered in the middle of the joint. But there were pins in it. And I didn't know what was going to be, you know, if we're going to be able to do anything, but then, like, I think it was like either on Thursday or Friday, you know, they shot my finger up so I could avoid the pain reflex. And I went out, and then it turned out, you know, it would still work. I could still throw. The interesting piece, though, was that, you know, when I did that, I didn't take a snap, from under center because, you know, that would not be good and be painful. And so I didn't take any snaps under center until we actually got in the game, and I think it was the third game that I was playing with it. With the pins, we were at St. Louis, and when I would start to push the pins out the backside of my finger. So I'm out in the game, and I'm like looking down at my finger, pushing pins back in to hold these bones in place in the middle of the game, and I'm just going. So it was kind of gnarly. But yeah, that Bills game. So you know, talk about, you know, people that don't get over stuff, like the Herschel Walker deal down there. When I got to Buffalo, signed with the Bills, and I was there, there were like members of their staff that were still bitter about that game. And, you know, and that was like 4 or 5 years later when I got to Buffalo. They were still bitter, still think they got screwed on a call. There was actually another call where they thought they got a favorable spot. So they were being whiny and, you know, about it, you know, even 4 or 5 years later. But it sure was a fun game. And then there's one other story about that game. You guys should look it up. I won't tell you the whole story right now. But when we scored the game-winning touchdown, it was during regulation, at the end of regulation. And so it wasn't overtime, so the game didn't end immediately. Well, we're still required to kick the extra point, right? And the Bills had left the field. Like, they were gone. And so we ran that last play with no defense on the field, but we still had to do it. And so rather than kicking the extra point, they just snapped the ball, and Vinatieri just grabbed the ball and ran it in for a 2-point conversion. Right?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
There's a story. There's a story, though. You guys should look it up. I won't tell you the whole story right now, but just look up worst gambling bad beat in history. And it ties to that game. There was some guy that with his last dime had placed a 10-way parlay, so he was set to win, I don't know, couple hundred grand, something like that. And because we went for two and scored 2 points rather than one, that lost him his 10-way parlay. So this guy sees this thing happen and like, oh no, they're gonna win, but Buffalo's still gonna cover. And because the Bills didn't take the field, this guy lost his 10-way parlay that was going to get him out of the dump. So look the story up. It's amazing. He placed 10 bets, 10th bet, and he'd won 9 in a row, and he was going to win the 10th. And if the Bills had just taken the field and just stood there, Vinatieri would have kicked the extra point, and the guy wins. Instead, we scored 2 points, and he loses his 10-way parlay. It's an incredible story. You got to look it up.
That is really something else. And by the way, Drew, I've spoken with Wade Phillips about that play, because I told him, like, hey, man, that was a pretty fun moment, huh? Like, I was just talking with him, because Wade's a really fun guy, really nice person. And Wade gave me this look. And it's funny, because you don't expect Wade to give you that kind of look, but perhaps I deserved it because I was trolling him. But, Drew, this was an absolute pleasure. Seriously, I can't believe that I got to talk to the person that is really the reason I love football. For all that you did for the Patriots back in the early in the 90s and stuff. Seriously, man, I can't thank you enough for all of those moments, pushing your pins back and your index finger and all of this. So seriously, thank you so much for joining. You made my day, and I hope to meet you someday, man. It would be fantastic.
Oh, I'm sure that'll happen, man. Maybe I'm up in Seattle. When times are normal, I'm up in Seattle quite a bit. So maybe we'll come sit in studio one of these days and hang out.
That would be wonderful.
But, man, great, awesome. great to talk to you guys. Bump, great to talk to you, bud. And go Cougs.
Go Cougs. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. And there's no Danny to talk that down, huh? Yeah, that's right. This is Cougs house now. Let's go. All right. Well, that was Drew Bledsoe. That is the coolest thing I've ever done. Jess, you're the best. Thank you so much again for surprising me with like two of my childhood heroes.
That was fun.
Wow. Yeah, it was. I don't really know what to say right now. I'm sort of like on like an extreme high right now. Hey, I've got a question. I think Michael Bumpus is the only person that can answer this question. Tyler Lockett was incredible this past season. He's been incredible his entire time with the Seattle Seahawks. He's only 27 years old. Is it possible for him to actually take another step further? Bob's going to answer that question for me next. It's Danny and Gallant right here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bumpus is sitting in for Danny, and I'm Paul. Tyler Lockett was awesome this past season. And considering there was no Doug Baldwin around anymore, it really was impressive. It's not to say he didn't have any help. He did have Will Dissly at the beginning of the year, and of course DK Metcalf really had a fantastic rookie season. But Lockett was awesome last season. He's 27 years old right now, Michael Bumpus, and ESPN put together a list of the league's best pass catchers. Lockett was actually second on the entire list, only behind the Saints' Michael Thomas. He had a catch rate of 74.5% of passes thrown his way. And considering, I guess, passes thrown his way had an expected catch rate of 61%. I mean, he was catching passes he wasn't supposed to on a regular basis. And also, he was open like 23% of passes that were that he ran routes on. 23%. I mean, wow. First off, how? Second off, and I mean, when he has a season like that, I mean, I know that he had the calf injury towards the end of the season bump, but I feel like he can get better, don't you?
Yeah, if he doesn't get better, are we mad? That's the thing, right?
No.
Like, no, you'll
no,
take
not
this
at all.
Every single year, you know? Like, this is, he's super productive. You mentioned his catch percentage, 74.5%. That's crazy. The year before, he was 81.4%, so maybe he can get better in that department, you know? I would think the next move for him would be for the Hawks to take him off of special teams so he saves himself about 4 to 6 reps a game. I think at this point of his career, he should be strictly a receiver, get him out the return game. And if there's one thing I would say Tyler Lockett could get better at, and this is just nitpicking at this point, he is who he is. He's 27 years old. He's one of the top receivers in the league. I would say it's his hand selection. And when I say hand selection, it's how he catches the football. Sometimes I feel like he lets it get into his body a lot, and he allows defenders to make plays on it rather than reaching out and grabbing the ball out the air. But he's also catches 74% of the footballs thrown to him. So it's like, you know, leave that alone. Now I'm just nitpicking. I'm just trying to answer your question at this point. But I think that if he were to be this Tyler Lockett for the rest of his career, Hawk fans would take that.
I've wondered why teams don't try to press him, because he's so good, especially downfield. I mean, when Russ throws those perfectly arced moon balls, Lockett almost exactly knows the correct position he needs to be in to box out a defender that might be trailing him, and is so good at making those catches sometimes when the ball is coming directly over him. And I mean, you played receiver. That's a really hard thing to do. And I mean, the degree of difficulty of some of the catches he made last season, Bob, it was so incredible. And, you know, I get that the injuries towards the end of the year, they changed things a little bit and that his numbers weren't what they could have been. But I mean, he's always been one of my favorite players in the league. If I had to pick like a favorite Seattle Seahawk, he's my number one. I just love watching him play. He reminds me of Troy Brown in New England, but like a souped up version of Troy Brown. Can do everything, like return kicks for you and all that. And I wonder, like, why don't teams try to stop him? Like, double cover him, or and I understand that there are other guys that could potentially help him out, but he's so good, I don't think he even gets the conversation that he needs to around the league about how good he is.
I think guys underestimate his abilities, you know, and I think guys are reluctant to try to press him because they know if he gets by you, it's a wrap. He's going to get open. He's going to catch that football. And he has a talent of adjusting his body in weird ways to catch a football. You mentioned when Russell throws the football right over his shoulder. That's the toughest catch in football, in my opinion. Whenever you're going back to a football or you're able to turn and face it, those are the easy ones. It's the ones that go over your shoulder and you lose sight of it for just a little bit. And he does a great job of adjusting. I think that catch against the LA Rams in the back of the end zone is one of the greatest throws and catches in NFL history. And you look at, if you freeze the pitcher right when he catches the ball, he got a toe tap. There's a bow in his back. You know what I mean? There's about 2 inches left of space on the sideline for him to make a mistake. And he just doesn't do that. I cannot think of a time where I said, dang, that was a drop by Tyler Lockett. I just can't think of it. I'm sure he's had a drop here and there, but he's so consistent that that just doesn't happen. So I think he will get better. I think there are things about his game that he knows that he needs to work on that we don't, right? Because we're not in the film room with him. We're not getting coached up by his receiver coach. So there's always something for guys to get better at. But, man, Tyler Lockett is a premier receiver in this league, and that's why you don't need an AB, because you got a Tyler Lockett. That's why.
Is he the McFlurry of the wide receiver world. And I asked that because, Bob, I saw on your Instagram story a couple of days ago, it was your son's 10th birthday, correct? And he had a McFlurry for the first time? He had never had one before.
I had a McFlurry, first time. Never had one.
Are you going to judge me? And, I've never had one before either.
No, that's good. That's good, man. You don't need McDonald's all the time. You know, that's good. It was interesting, though. I give him McFlurry, and the spoon can be confused as a straw. If you don't know McFlurry, the spoon can look like a straw. First, it's a big straw, so I don't know what he was thinking. But he goes down to drink the McFlurry like it's a milkshake, and I just lost it. I looked at my wife, and I said, that's just good parenting. Huh? He's never had a McFlurry? good for us, and it made for a good laugh.
So it's an ice cream. You don't drink it? I thought it was a smoothie. It's not.
No, it's an ice cream.
It's not.
Wait, you don't know what a McFlurry is?
No, I don't know anything about anything. Like, my mother, in addition to making me stop watching Super Bowls.
Don't you bring Kitsy into this. Don't you blame her for your ignorance here.
we didn't get fast food a whole lot. So I never had it. I never had a McFlurry. I haven't had the Frosty. That's the Dairy Queen equivalent, correct?
Blizzard. And it's a Blizzard.
Blizzard. My bad. What's the Frosty? Where's Frosty?
That's Wendy's.
Wendy's. Okay, my bad. So I haven't had any of those. Apparently, I need to change it. But none of these are milkshakes?
No.
No? Oh. Well, now I just feel like an idiot. All right, now
I know what I'm getting you for your birthday.
The Frosty is the closest one. Everything else has like stuff swirled in it, and it's like soft serve ice cream. The Frosty is like the closest consistency to a milkshake, but you still eat it with a spoon.
Am I weird in that I think soft serve ice cream, like I like the frozen ice cream, you know, like the extra frozen. There's something about the consistency of it that I think is a lot better than the soft serve kind.
You're insane.
Why?
Because soft serve ice cream is better than everything.
But it's soft, and like the other ice cream, I don't know, it just, there's something about it.
Is impossible to eat? Ew.
Well,
it's a little
difficult to eat it. But
you have to chew
it,
basically.
Put it in a cone.
All right. Obviously, we're going to agree to disagree on this one.
Listen, I'm just asking the questions that need to be asked. That's all I'm doing. By the way, text in 710-710. Maybe we could get to this in flags. If there's a random food item, like a popular food item that you've never had. I've also like only had Taco Bell once in my life. I'm just weird. Michael Bumpus, Paul Gallant, it's Danny and Gallant. We're going to wrap things up after this.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It's that time. We throw flags or we raise flags to wrap up the program. With Michael Pompa sitting in for Danny O'Neill, I do want to read a text. It's 710-710 on the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. I don't know if we should all be hugging Paul in pity or shaking our heads in disgust. Paul not having had a McFlurry or knowing anything about it is worse than Tom Wassel of Tom, Jake, and Stacy not having an orange until a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts? He didn't have an orange until a few years ago? I mean, like, oranges are nutritious, right? Come on. Like, this is not even close. There's
if
no
you've ever played a
here.
Sport in your life, it was served to you at halftime. Let's go.
Exactly. Ooh. Nerds. Classic. All right. Well, we could go around the room. Who wants to raise them? Who wants to throw them? Three, two, one. Who is going to go first? I'm trying to filibuster and think of it in my mind. I'm going to go with Jessamine McIntyre as number one. Jess. What you got?
Oh, thank you. I'm going to raise a flag to all of you guys for playing in my charades, especially Lydia Cruz back in the studio, who not only has to deal with all the logistics of getting us all on the air, but also helps out keep a little secret so I can continue to surprise people, because
yes,
that's just really fun for me. And it feels a little self-indulgent to hear you guys geek out over talking to some of your heroes. So thank you to everyone, especially Lydia and to Drew for joining us.
Seriously.
Thanks to you, Jess, setting it all up.
It's
yes.
Fun.
Jess, Lydia, Bump. Seriously, that made my day. Really, I'm still on like an emotional high. I don't know how long this thing is going to go, but it's awesome. I might have to like bust out Madden 2001.
Drew is also just genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met or interacted with, because I've interviewed him in the past, and he just really is that kind, that humble, that down to earth. And even as a Husky, which it pains me to say that sometimes, he's wonderful. And yeah, he's just a cool guy. He was actually in California. We talked about a little bit just to help out his friend's grandmother move. So, and play a little golf, of course, but like, that's awesome. So thanks to Drew for coming on too.
Really, very cool. Lydia, what you got for a flag?
I'm going to raise a flag for all the nominees for the Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian Award. In particular, a near and dear person to this community, which would be Twins DH Nelson Cruz. Also just a great last name, Nelly. Just a great last name. Probably the best last name that's out there. But Nelson's one of the sweetest people I've ever interacted with. One of the people that genuinely cares about each person that he comes into contact with, whether they are on his radar, like whether you would think they'd be on the radar of a star athlete or not. He always genuinely cares about the people around him. So to hear about all the work he's done in his home country, helping whether it's get ambulances or helping people just get access to dental care, access to education, it's pretty incredible. And then also to forward Kevin Love, because I have a lot of respect and love for K-Love. He was going to UCLA when I was going to Claremont McKenna, and so I got to watch him play. And it's May is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and Kevin Love is nominated in part for all the work that he's done for mental health awareness, been really vocal about his struggles. And I think that's awesome. It should be talked about more. We should erase the stigma around it for people who do struggle with it. So a huge flag raise to those guys.
100%, Lydia. And look, there are a lot of people that are dealing with that on Kevin Love's front. I mean, I know I see, maybe I need to start seeing it again, but I would see somebody for help with anger management. I have seen therapist over depression and stuff like that. It is a lot more common than people think it is, and I think you're right in that there are a lot of people that are maybe nervous to come out and come forward and admit that maybe there's something that needs to be looked at because of that stigma that's attached to it. So very cool by Kevin Love, and it's awesome also by Nelson Cruz. I mean, my God, this guy's going to the Dominican Republic when the world is basically on fire right now, and he's helping people out. It's very, very cool, and anyone who can do anything at this point, you are a wonderful, wonderful person. Michael Bumpus, what do you got for a flag?
I will raise a flag for Jessamine for setting up the Drew Bledsoe interview and allowing me to be in on it, because I kid you not, it was like waiting for my son to open up that PS4 present on Christmas Day. And you know he's gonna geek out once he opens it up, and seeing the way Paul reacted and smiled and lit up, that was awesome. Big ups to Jessamine for setting that up.
Thank you.
Seriously. I'm just going to wrap it up by raising a flag to Drew Bledsoe. And look, I know we all have athletes that when we were young were really important to us. And for 6-7-year-old Paul, I mean, this was my first favorite athlete. I grew up watching those 90s Patriots, and I mean, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and it gets forgotten because Tom Brady eventually came in and won the Super Bowl with him, but I mean, that guy was amazing. And the toughness that he showed over his career, talking about the pins that he put back in his finger, this is a guy who like was not very mobile, who stood in the pocket and just took a pounding, because sometimes there was a game in 1994, second season in the league, where he dropped back against the Minnesota Vikings and he threw 70 passes. It's like the record for attempts in a game. He's getting beaten up every single play, and he was able to hang in there. One of the better quarterbacks that I ever remember, and it was so cool to actually get to talk with him. And Lydia, you're so right. The guy's awesome. And I hope that I'll get to meet him in person someday. This is very cool. Thank you guys so much for this. I'm sorry for all the self-indulgence, but it's been a lot of
that
fun for me.
Point.
I've been very much
that
enjoying
was the
it.
Point.
I know. It's awesome. Fantastic. So, guys, I hope you all enjoyed the show. We're going to have a fun Friday tomorrow with Michael Bumpus hanging out one more time for the Professor John Clayton, for Brock Huer, Drew Bledsoe, Lydia Cruz, Jessamyn McIntyre, and my buddy Michael Bumpus. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell, and you will hear us tomorrow.